This is the Big E Sports Show
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
From the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Elissa Walker Campbell.
Glad you're with us on this Saturday afternoon. Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. I'm your host, Elissa Walker Campbell. Many different ways to connect with our national audience. We are always live on social media at E Radio Sports, podcastarena.com. If you miss any of our interviews over the next 2 hours, they are posted on there. And we're going to open up the mic and we're going to start off with some NFL news and notes. And we're delighted to have with us in studio, that is my producer, Luke Mario. Hello, Luke.
Hey, good afternoon. It's good to be back here with another week.
Well, we're going to start off our conversation and have you provide a recap of the Vikings and the Eagles. The Vikings, unfortunately, I know this is your team, but they have lost their first two games. How do they bounce back in week three?
It's a good question. They have the Chargers now, and what is a must-win game? At least for the Vikings, they'll be at home, so they'll have to find a way to win next week. But it's just been typical Viking stuff. They've had 7 turnovers in the first 2 games. And it sounds like a cop-out, but it really is a lot of bad luck. They tell you anytime there's a fumble, there's a 50-50 chance of recovery. So you should recover half of your fumbles. Right now, the Vikings have recovered 0 of their 7 fumbles through the first 2 games. So it sounds like a typical Vikings fan making excuses, but it really has been a lot of bad luck. They've had more yards than their first 2 opponents and yet have lost the games just because of the unforced errors and the turnovers. So, you know, I think to make it simple, if they clean that up, they have the talent. They've played well enough this year. I mean, both games have been 1-score games. They've lost by a total of 9 points despite all the miscues. So if they just clean up those turnovers, I think they'll be okay. The problem is you just can't dig yourself too deep of a hole, and right now they're staring at a potential 0-3 start, depending on what happens next week.
You know, Luke, what I thought was impressive from Thursday night is that they refused to quit. I mean, they were down by 20, but they kept coming.
Yeah, and that's the typical, like, Kirk Cousins, Vikings. And I think that's what actually drives fans. It makes them even more frustrated because Kirk Cousins will make some of those plays when they're down 20. And it's like, well, where was that in the first half when we fell behind 20? So it's kind of a double-edged sword that, yeah, they'll play well, they'll always fight, they'll grind, they'll make it interesting. But then it just makes you a little more frustrated because it's like, oh, man, if only they could play like that for the entire game or for the first half instead of falling behind. So there's a reason why they've led the league in one possession games the last couple of years. It's just what they do. They always find a way to keep it close and make it interesting, and unfortunately not able to pull out either of these first two games here to start this year.
Okay, so Luke, the Vikings last year, 13-4. Do you modify your expectations now? What say you?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, my expectations were already adjusted compared to last year, because last year they won a record amount of 1-score games. And if you go back and you look, there's been 42 teams in NFL history that have won 8 1-score games in a season. And 30 of those 42 teams had a worse record than next year. So history told us the Vikings were going to win fewer than 13 games. That was my expectation. Now, 2 weeks into this season, 0-2, I probably should adjust my expectations even more. I think they'll still be competitive, good in the playoff race, but to expect them to win 12, 13 games this year, that was probably always a fool's gold.
It is week 2 in the NFL season. We are going one-on-one with Luke Mario from Sports Map Radio and a number of other storylines we got to take a deep dive on. The Jets are on the road to face the Cowboys. Can they keep this one close?
We'll see. I mean, they have the defense. If the defense comes and plays like it did against Buffalo on Monday night, then the defense may be able to keep them in the game. The thing is with Zach Wilson, it's just, you know, don't screw it up. And that's what they tried when he took over Monday night. And he did have a costly interception, but they found a way to win that game. And they kind of did it despite Zach Wilson. They scored on special teams. The defense set up the offense by forcing 4 turnovers. Dak Prescott did lead the league in interceptions last year, so maybe he'll be prone to a few mistakes tomorrow. But that's kind of the hope for the Jets. The defense is going to have to be their best offense. Try to get some turnovers, get some short fields for Zach Wilson. And then if you're Zach Wilson in that Jets offense, like I said, just don't screw it up. Don't turn it over. Stay on schedule. Try to run the football. Keep things simple. And see if you can hang in there. But there's a reason why the Cowboys are almost a double-digit favorite. I mean, this is a long shot shot may be a too strong of a term, but this is a big test for the Jets to try to just even stay in this game and try to find a way to win.
So how good is the Cowboys' defense?
It's good. It might be the best in the league. I don't think it's quite as good as what we saw Sunday, right? I think it's unfair to expect that performance each week. But what a statement they made to start the season on national TV against a divisional rival on the road. I think it might be the best in the league. The Jets have an argument for that, too. So that's why this will be an interesting matchup. Might be very low scoring. These are maybe the two best defenses in the league. But credit the Cowboys. They've done a great job building that defense. Dan Quinn, they've been able to keep him around as the coordinator, and he's done a really good job. That's their calling card, too. Like I said, Dak Prescott led the league in interceptions last year despite missing five games, and they still won 12 games last year just because the defense is so good. And that defense is averaging 2 forced turnovers under Dan Quinn, which is remarkable. So that helps the offense as well. So we'll see. They don't have the toughest test with Zach Wilson and the Jets this weekend. But yeah, that Cowboys defense by year's end might be the best in the league.
Okay, Lou, Cowboy Nation, they are fired up. I mean, it's Super Bowl or bust. I mean, should they just kind of temper that, hit the brake a little bit?
I think so. I mean, it's such a lame diagnosis to say it's the Cowboys, so we can't believe in them. That's a cop-out as well. So, but with that said, this is typical Cowboy Nation, or, you look at this past weekend, Texas gets the big win against Alabama. The Cowboys get the big win, and the talk all week is Texas is back, and the Cowboys are going to win the Super Bowl, and, it's still very early in the season. We have to pump the brakes. So 1 week does not make a season. It was as good of a start as you could have for Dallas. They'll probably look good against the Jets this weekend as well, but it's a long year, and you just worry about if they have that winning DNA, if Mike McCarthy and Dak Prescott are the right pieces in the biggest moments. And again, it may be unfair, but there's a reason why this team hasn't made it to the NFC Championship game since 1995. It's been a long time.
Okay, so we hit on the Cowboys. Let's talk about the Jets. They are in town to face the Cowboys tomorrow, 4:25 kickoff on CBS. Devastating news last week is the Jets for the Jets as Rodgers leaves after only 4 snaps in his debut. What's next for them? I mean, do they need to hang on to Zach Wilson?
Yeah, it's hard to, where do you go from here? I think Zach Wilson's the only option. I think it's tough to bring somebody in now and try to get them up to speed. Also, I just don't know if there's a better option realistically. I mean, if you want to try to make a trade for a Matt Stafford or a Kirk Cousins, that's one thing. I don't know how likely that would be. But to try to find a free agent quarterback, people are talking about Matt Ryan, Chad Henne. These guys, I don't think they're much better than Zach Wilson. Zach Wilson knows the offense. You might as well stick with him. It is a real shame for the Jets, and it's a shame just for NFL fans to lose Aaron Rodgers this year and what the Jets could have accomplished. So now it's a lot like last year, I guess. Last year, they had all the pieces except the quarterback and won 7 games. Those probably should be the expectations this year. But I think this is a big opportunity for Zach Wilson to try to prove himself, obviously. And then also for the head coach, Robert Saleh, offensive coordinator Nathaniel Hackett, I almost feel like it's a win-win. If they don't have success, well, the scapegoat is Zach Wilson. What do you expect? Aaron Rodgers got hurt. But if they do have success, it makes them look even better. So it might sound crazy, but I think the Jets, despite the heartbreak this past week with the news, I feel like they're almost playing with house money now. Just go out there, try to win some games, and there's a lot fewer expectations on them now.
Okay, so Luke, what does the future hold for Aaron Rodgers? Will he retire? I mean, he says he's going to come back.
Yeah, he's going to be 40 in December, right? He's got to come off of this Achilles injury. It's tough. We haven't seen a quarterback this age go through this. Dan Marino suffered the Achilles injury, but he was 32. Vinny Testaverde suffered it with the Jets week one as well, but he was also 32. And they came back, and Marino admits he wasn't quite the same guy afterwards, although he also believes the surgery didn't go as planned, so it's the whole thing. But yeah, Rodgers is going to be 40, coming off an Achilles injury, has never really played for the Jets other than 4 snaps, so it's not like he has some sort of obligation. You imagine a star like that doesn't want to go out that way, and so he'll come back and try to do everything he can next year. But I spoke with a former NFL team doctor this past week, and he laid the foundation tried to put pause on the whole situation, talking about how tough of a situation this is to come back. Quarterback position may be the easiest because you don't have to move as much, but it is a long road ahead for Rodgers to see if he could do this at age 40. I expect he'll try, but maybe he gets down the road in a few months and realizes, this is not worth it. I'm just going to retire.
I'm curious, what did the doctor say in terms of the rehab and how you go about it?
Yeah, it's a long process, about 9 months. They try to get you in to have surgery as quickly as possible. I haven't seen any news this week. I don't know if Rodgers has already gotten the surgery. And then, obviously he was already in a boot Monday night. You have to stay in that boot for a while. Then you're on crutches. It takes a few months before you're even just walking around again. He'll probably be on that little knee cart. So it really is a long process just to get back up and walking around like a normal person, let alone moving and playing football. And the doctor's concern, again, was just the age. You know, it's different when you get injured when you're 19, 29, 39. As you get older, you might have a few drinks on a Friday night. It affects you the whole weekend, right? Your body just changes as you get older. And this is a whole other serious issue with an Achilles injury. So, like I said, Rodgers will find out as he goes through this. Maybe he realizes down the road, like, this is a lot tougher than I thought. This isn't worth it. But Dr. Chow was the doctor, and he warned us that it could be a long road ahead over this next year.
Hey, Jets Cowboys 425 kickoff CBS. We've been going one-on-one with Luke Mario. Check him out. Mario on the mic right here at your network, Sports Map Radio. We're going to step aside for a quick commercial break. Coming up next is Pro Football Hall of Famer Dick Vermeil.
Working in the oil and gas industry requires that you have the best equipment available because every job counts. At Energy Wellfab, our goal is to manufacture the best oil and gas processing equipment for customers through hard work and commitment. We proudly stand behind quality products just as we have for over 30 years. From inside out, we promote excellence, precision, and dedication. These values are the foundation for our success and why we continue to progress and go unmatched in customer satisfaction, loyalty, and service. Contact Energy Wellfab for your oil and gas processing equipment needs at energywellfab.com.
You're listening to the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, Elissa Walker-Campbell, welcome back. Hour one, Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show, being powered by our good friends at Progressive Insurance. For a job you'll love, visit progressive.com/careers. Well, as promised, our NFL news and notes continues. And in our next segment, we're going to take time to visit with Pro Football Hall of Famer, the great Dick Vermeil, and get his thoughts on some of his former teams. Always an honor. Thank you so much for carving out some time. Hello, Dick.
Hi, how are you? Always great to be back with my voice in Houston, believe me.
Hey, it's great to have you on the program this weekend, and we've got a lot to unpack. And we want to start off our conversation talking about one of your former teams and the Eagles. They certainly took care of business on Thursday night against the Vikings in Week 2 with that 34-28 win. The win gives the Eagles that they are now have this unblemished record at 2-0. Why have they been so impressive?
Well, you know, I've got calls in from Philadelphia this morning. Everybody's mad at them because they didn't blow them out.
Right.
it's amazing. And the passing game isn't what it was last year. But I'll tell you this, they started running the ball, and that really was a game changer for them. Once they really decided, hey, we're going to hand the ball up to and you know, get that went over 250 yards rushing. That's a big day's work in the NFL.
And a guy that came to the office ready to go was running back DeAndre Swift. He stole the show for the Eagles. Yeah, and you know what's so interesting, Dick, is that he's a Philly guy and rushed for a career-best 175 yards on 28 carries, and he was always moving that ball forward.
Yeah, you know, they have an awfully fine offensive line there. You know, just really, really good. They have two perennial all-pros in the center and the right tackle, and the left tackle is going to end up being one, and the two young offensive linemen playing the guard position, they'll probably end up being all-pro as they mature. So why not run the ball? Yeah, Ryan, especially with Swift, you know, he's been banked up a little in his career, and now he's got a fresh start in Philadelphia with an outstanding offensive line and all-pro quarterback. He's living.
You know, Coach, I want you to weigh in on that heated discussion that we saw on the sideline between Jalen Hurts and A.J. Brown. I mean, what can you provide in terms of insight, and maybe can you understand Brown's frustration? I mean, what would your message be to these players as their coach?
Well, I would bring them both in and discuss the situation, that's for sure. To show it on national television like they did last night is wrong. And, you know, Brown had an incident like this last year. He has a tendency to pout when the ball doesn't come his way because he loves to play.
Yeah.
And he thinks, you know, they ought to be throwing the ball to him every time deep downfield. And he gets upset. Part of it is because of his competitive nature. Part of it's because a little bit of him immaturity, in my opinion. But, he's not going to win the battle when it comes to arguing with Jalen Hurts, believe me.
You're listening to the legendary coach Dick Vermeil joining us this weekend at Sports Map Radio Network, talking about one of his former teams, the Eagles. And what are your expectations for them this year? Because it seems like they can find a way to win a lot of different ways, and they chose the run game on Thursday night.
Well, they're unlimited, really. They're a Super Bowl caliber football team. Now, they have to play like it every week. The second half of their schedule, I think 9 out of the last 10 games, are playoff caliber teams. And if they don't play better than they have the last 2 weeks, they won't win half of them. So I think they'll gradually get better. Their approach to training camp leads to this kind of a little, maybe not up to par performances, but once they get going, usually they're a little more healthy than some teams, and they have a lot to gain in performance from the first game to about the third or fourth. I look for them next week against Tampa Bay to look a little more polished than they have so far in the passing game.
I know you live in the area and you're close with the organization. I mean, what did they focus in on in the offseason to even improve upon that 14-3 record from last year? I mean, wins are hard to come by in the NFL.
No, Howie Roseman, the general manager, in his personal department, I don't think anybody's doing a better job.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that they got Carter, in the first 10 picks was amazing. And watching him play last night, he reminds me of a young Reggie White, who I consider maybe one of the finest defensive linemen that ever played. And he has such talent and explosiveness for a big man. And he's gonna make the defense better as everyone plays around him. And then, they have other good defensive linemen, too. They led the league in sacks last year. So they have no limitation other than injuries. If somebody gets hurt, you're not as good as you were.
Legendary NFL coach Dick Vermeil with us. Won 120 games as a head coach with 3 different NFL teams. Of course, won the Super Bowl with the Rams in 99. And I want to focus our conversation right now on the Eagles quarterback and Jalen Hurts. And there's so much to love about him in terms of his versatility. He's rushed for 304 times, which is a league high among quarterbacks. He's got that triple threat approach, beating defenses with his arms, his legs, and his mind. But my question to you is that sustainable? I mean, we can't have this guy getting beat up and he can't get sacked.
Well, the way they were running him last night, especially early in the game, I would be very concerned about it. Designed almost power runs with a lead guard coming around or a lead tight end pulling through and around. That scares me a little bit. I can see him making a lot of yards in scramble situations because the defense has all dropped and played pass defense. But just design runs, I think if you do too many of those, he's going to end up missing a few ball games. That's just my opinion. But he has no limitation. What impresses me most is his maturity, his character, and how he expresses himself. And he's a superstar in every category.
Yeah, Jalen Hurts sacked 4 times against the Vikings on Thursday night. Would love for you to just share about what were your expectations for him when he arrived in Philadelphia. I mean, there's no doubt how effective he can be as a quarterback, but did you think he would have this high level of success? Obviously, they're going to pay him for it.
Well, they are paying him. When he came in and I watched him at practice and watched him play his first year or some, I was a little bit concerned if he was going to be a real pure, accurate passer. But he comes back his second year and he made gigantic strides. And I eliminated that negative thought. I said, this guy can throw the ball with anybody. The accurate balls, and a wide variety, and he has no limitation in arm strength, his mobility to throw off balance and all these kind of things. They're so lucky to have him right now, and they've done a great job of coaching him.
Certainly a special player when you talk about Jalen Hurts. Now, another one of the teams, of your former teams, we need to shine the spotlight on is let's talk about the reigning Super Bowl champs in the Kansas City Chiefs. And Patrick Mahomes, he leads the Chiefs to their second NFL title in 4 years. Certainly impressive. What are your expectations for them this year, and can they repeat?
I think they'll be right there. They played the first ball game without their tight end and without their best defensive tackle. Now they're both in there and ready to go. I think they'll be back. That'll make a difference. And they're not going to go undefeated. I don't know if any team will go undefeated. But if they stay healthy, and I know at the end of the season, they're going to be in the playoffs playing for the opportunity to go to the Super Bowl. And nobody right now is doing a more complete job of coaching a pro football team than Andy Reid and his staff.
Well, the Chiefs lost in week one for the first time in Patrick Mahomes' era. And obviously, you have to think, you know, with Chris Jones and Travis Kelce being out, that obviously played a role.
No question. Yeah. Difference makers. You need those guys when you're playing against good teams that take what you coach, take what you design, and take it to a level above both of those and get things done that you just don't draw on the blackboard. So, you know, with them coming back, they'll be much stronger. And, you know, they're going to be very, very tough to beat every weekend.
And, of course, the Chiefs, they are on the road tomorrow. They are facing the Jaguars and seeking their first win after that one-point loss to the Lions. Yeah. How do you see this one playing out?
Well, the Chiefs are a better football team. Now, the Jaguars surprised everybody last year. Doug Peterson did a great job. He's a protege of Andy Reid. Okay, Andy trained him, you know, coached him and trained him. So they both know each other well. But Andy Reid's experience and the talent, Patrick Mahomes and these kind of guys are going to be tough to beat. And I don't see them losing in Jacksonville. But, you know, they upset some people last year. So you never know.
Hey, we are winding down our time. Legendary NFL coach Dick Vermeil with us on this Saturday afternoon. In fact, he is taking in some college football action. UCLA hosting NC Central, and you were the head coach for the Bruins in 74 and 75, which included a victory in the 76 Rose Bowl over top-ranked and unbeaten Ohio State. Take us back down memory lane. What was that game like?
Well, that's, to me, maybe one of the biggest games ever. You know, to me, because you're young and passionate and intense, and you get to beat the number one team in the country early in your career. And at that time, you know, you're the head coach, you're the offensive coordinator, you're the quarterback coach, you're calling the plays, you're doing it all on your own, and you think you're pretty smart, and it goes real well. And you never really forget that kind of experience, and you never lower it in rank in your career of just unbelievable things happening positively for you in your career. And, you know, even the Super Bowl, you know, in the Super Bowl, I have somebody else calling the plays in the game and all that kind of stuff. It makes you feel just a little detached in comparison to every 30 seconds you're making a decision.
Incredible resume when we talk about Dick Vermeil, coached 240 NFL games, pro coaching career spanned 19 seasons in the NFL, 15 of those as the head coach of the Eagles with the Rams and the Chiefs, and of course guided the Eagles to the Super Bowl in 1980 and won with the Rams in 99. Always a true pleasure when you catch up with us on this weekend at Sports Map Radio Network. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Always great to be with you.
You bet. Stick around. Much more coming your way. The fastest 2 hours in radio. Sports Map Radio Network. We will be right back after this quick break.
You're listening to the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, week 3 college football game day coverage continues right here at Sports Map Radio Network. The Big E Sports Show, we have got you covered. LSU, Mississippi State, they are underway. The first SEC showdown of the 2023 college football season. The Tigers, incidentally, they have won 4 of the last 5 against the Bulldogs. And the Tigers fell to number 3 Florida State in that embarrassing loss in Orlando. So here to help us understand all of this from The Athletic, that is Brody Miller. Hello, Brody.
Hey, how are you doing?
Hey, we appreciate you carving out some time, and always a lot of fun on a Saturday afternoon talking some college football. So let's rewind a bit and take us back to week one, that season opener against Florida State. Unfortunately, it was a historic upset loss to the Seminoles. Give us your observations. What did you learn?
Yeah, I think a few things stood out. I mean, I think a lot of people around Baton Rouge, around Louisiana, and around the country really thought this LSU team was a team that was ready to make that jump to the SEC title contender, the national, you know, the college football playoff contender. Their experience, all that, and I think what we saw that last, you know, that first week was a team that isn't quite ready yet. And Brian Kelly came out and said, "This isn't the team I thought it was." And Brian Kelly's very big on kind of using press conferences as motivation, but still, Florida State just looked more in command. They looked like the team that, you know, was better at play calling, was more experienced. They beat them up on the line of scrimmage, which, yeah, I mean, Florida State's front 7 defensively was supposed to be really good. That's not a shock, but LSU's offensive line was supposed to be, you know, one of the better ones in the country. So I think in a lot of ways that really stood out. But the other thing that I think is the greater concern going forward is this is a really talented LSU defense, but at the same time, It's a completely new group of corners. All of them are transfers, every single one, and that you never know how that's going to go. There's so much talent in the front seven, but you know, you're not sure who's in the right places, who's ready. And I think that Florida State game really showed that this defense might not be really what we thought it was. And you know, even last week against Grambling, obviously LSU won handily and it wasn't a problem, but Grambling still got big chunks. Scrambling still made big plays. So I think you're at a point where we shouldn't overreact and act like LSU is on a top 10 team, because they probably still are. But there are major questions they need to solve if they want any chance in the SEC.
LSU Tigers, Labor Day weekend, 45-24 loss to the Seminoles. And you just highlighted, talking about head coach Brian Kelly, the message to the team. And he was able to use that effectively in his press conference. So, you know, just talking about that, everybody from top to bottom have to do a better job developing this team. They fell short in a lot of different areas. So what has been that focal point over this past week, what they had to address coming into the game that's underway right now against Mississippi State?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it was kind of a top-to-bottom thing in terms of, okay, you know, are you sure you're using the right players in the right places? You know, Harold Perkins is the best example. He's one of the best players in all of college football, this exciting linebacker that made a name for himself rushing off the edge as a freshman. And this year they wanted to make him more of a complete player, which had him in the inside. And I understood the thinking there, but I think Brian Kelly and the whole staff came away from that Florida State game being like, hey, that's actually kind of taking him out of the game in a little bit of a way, and you're neutralizing that incredible strength. So I think, you know, that's an example of, you know, kind of coaching and how else you can kind of improve things like that. But a lot of it is the players need to kind of, you know, make less mistakes, take ownership and those kind of things. And some of it is just as simple as, you know, this is just a really good team that just needs to kind of figure some things out. Florida State deserves credit for what they did, and it's not just LSU's a mess. But, I mean, this week against Mississippi State will be such a key test because, you know, LSU is about a 9-point favorite. That's the kind of game where you find out who's ready and who's not, because, yeah, you should win, but are you good enough to go win that game by 2-3 scores to prove yourself? Or does Mississippi State, you know, make this really hard and you know, in Starkville and really, you know, I don't know, make this competitive or seal a win. So I think this will be a really good test for LSU.
Oh, yes. We are going one-on-one. Brody Miller from The Athletic. Brody, let's pause and have you connect with our national audience. Where can they go and find all of your work online?
Absolutely. You can follow me at Brody A. Miller on Twitter or subscribe to theathletic.com and get all of our coverage.
Brody's home base, of course, is New Orleans. Talking about, we're highlighting LSU and hoping to right the ship and get a win against Mississippi State. But I just have to wonder for you personally, you've covered this team for many, many years. Have your expectations changed in terms of what the Tigers can accomplish in 2023?
I think a little bit, right? I mean, I think it's always tough because in some ways, you know, you go into a year like this, you don't expect them to go undefeated necessarily, especially with this kind of schedule. You know, you think, hey, you know, 10-1, 10-2, 11-1, maybe 11-1, you sneak in the playoff. And it's not like a loss to a top 10 team immediately changes that. You know, there's a losable game and they could still, you know, go beat Alabama, go beat, you know, your Ole Misses and still have a really great year. Absolutely. But it does kind of change a little bit in terms of, okay, maybe this team isn't this ready-made product we thought. Maybe they're not, you know, this team that can go win a national title. So I don't think it drastically changes, but especially it helps a lot that Alabama looks suspect against, you know, against Texas. All of a sudden that West still feels completely up for grab. But I think so much of the hope for this year was thinking, okay, Jane Daniels is going to take this big leap and be a Heisman candidate. This defense with Mason Smith and Harold Perkins is going to be elite. It probably isn't that. So I still think it's a top 10 team. I still think it's possible they go 11-1, 10-2, and maybe compete for a playoff spot. But it's definitely my sense of what the ceiling can be has definitely declined.
LSU, Mississippi State underway right now. Just how important is this game this afternoon?
Important. Yes, I'd say it's important in the sense of, you know, one, Mississippi State needs to kind of prove what they can be, but LSU needs to prove they can be a take care of business on the SEC on the road team. And if they're not, then you really reduce those expectations you just thought of. You know, if they coming out of this game with, I don't know, like a 6-point win, and yeah, they get it, but it's not pretty. I think at that point you can comfortably kind of say, hey, this isn't that title team you thought of. Now, if they go out and win by 21, 28, all of a sudden it's okay. You know, Florida State's a tough loss, but it's week one. No one's quite themselves yet. Florida State's a top five team. You start rationalizing, you know, hey, this actually can win the SEC. So I guess it's not this majorly important game in terms of this week, but it's very important in terms of figuring out what LSU is.
It is week three of the college football season, going one-on-one with Brody Miller from The Athletic. And since we're talking about the SEC, I wanted you to weigh in and provide some of your thoughts and commentary on Alabama's loss to Texas. Certainly embarrassing early season loss by double digits at Bryant-Denny Stadium. And that's the first time under head coach Nick Saban.
Yes, I think a lot of it's kind of the way they lost too, right? It's getting beat up. They got beat up on the line of scrimmage by Texas. And some of that's recruiting. Some of that's toughness. You know, some of that stuff that's hard to really put your finger on. But I think Alabama really, you know, switching to Notre Dame's offense coordinator, Tommy Rees, and, you know, giving Jalen Milroe the start, more of a physical running quarterback. All the things they kind of did this offseason were really pointing toward Alabama thought they were going to be this really physical elite running team that was going to kind of bully people. And then for your first big game to go against a team that I think they've proved it's wrong, but for years has not been tough enough, physical enough in Texas, and get bullied like that. Yeah, I think that's all of a sudden you do raise a lot of red flags. And there have been multiple reports today that Alabama's switching to Tyler Buckner, the old Notre Dame quarterback, this week against South Florida. So maybe that'll change kind of what they want to do offensively. But, you know, I'm not hitting the panic button or anything on Alabama as a whole, because they are still recruiting like the first or second best team in the country. They do still have a really exciting team that at times looked great against Texas. So I'm not going to overreact to them. But there are major red flags that, okay, I don't know what this offense can be. I don't know what this quarterback situation can do. So, you know, kind of we're talking about LSU lowering expectations and all that. I think Alabama, you definitely now lower expectations big time.
Okay, so does the loss to Texas, does this impact Alabama's playoff hopes?
Definitely. Kind of in the same way as LSU where, yeah, I mean, you're still one of the best teams in the SEC, so you could still easily, quite frankly, Alabama and LSU could both easily go undefeated the rest of the year because the West is winnable, and then maybe lose in the SEC title game to Georgia. But you know, if you're a two-loss team, maybe you still backdoor your way in. A lot of scenarios, but yeah, I mean, your confidence level in Alabama as a playoff team probably goes down 50%, right?
Hey, we are winding down our time from The Athletic. Brody Miller, our very special guest here in Hour 1 at Sports Map Radio Network. My final question for you is, when we're talking about Alabama football, I mean, are they kind of slipping from the standard that it created for itself? I mean, because Georgia, obviously, is the top dog.
I think at this point, you do kind of have to say they have slipped a little bit. You know, again, it's like you don't want to be too reactionary or anything like that, because in the grand scheme, they're still one of the five, six best teams in the country, without a doubt. But totally. I mean, Georgia has officially, I think at this point, taken that spot of, you know, the team that you just trust every year, the team that can reload every year. And that used to be what Alabama is. And the fact that we're at kind of year three now in a row of, you know, the line of scrimmage isn't the strength it used to be, and,
right,
and all that, then yeah, I think it's fair to say they've dropped. But dropping for them is dropping from being the year-in, year-out number one to still one of the five or six. That's still a good place to be.
Hey, good stuff. Staff writer for The Athletic, Brody Miller. Check him out online. Covers the LSU Tigers. And also, we got to have him back and extend an invitation. We got to talk some PGA news and notes, okay?
Absolutely. Anytime. Take care.
You bet. Stick around. Much more coming your way. NBA news and notes with Mitch Lawrence after this quick break.
You're listening to the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, Elissa Walker-Campbell. Welcome back. Hour 1, Sports Map Radio Network, being powered by our good friends at Progressive Insurance. For a job you'll love, visit progressive.com/careers. Well, our college football, our NFL coverage continues here, but right now we're going to focus our attention on some NBA and some of the biggest storylines as we look forward to a brand new season. Delighted to welcome back with us is Mitch Lawrence from SiriusXM NBA Radio. Hello, Mitch.
Alyssa, how are you? I'm glad to be back for another season with you. Enjoy working with you. How are things, all right?
Hey, all is well. Always excited to talk about the brand new season. But I think the biggest storyline we have got to hit on is the NBA Board of Governors approved a tougher rest rule. So get us up to speed, and how will this new rule with resting stars work?
Well, it's a big rule change. They're going to be cracking down a lot more on getting players, superstars especially, back on the court and refraining from resting, which really has been a blight for the NBA. You know, there's been a rule on the books for over, what, the last 5-6 years that didn't work about resting. So the league has come up with a bunch of guidelines which basically forces teams to play their superstars or face some big penalties, not paid by the players, by the teams. I think we should start off with the fact, though, that the NBA is doing this really now only because they're in the midst of scoring a record contract for the new TV and streaming that's coming up. You know, the current contract expires in a couple of years in 2025. That one was worth $24 billion. This new one, the league might be trying to get upwards of $75 billion. So they realize, the league, you know, the broadcast partners have not been happy at all with how the players, the superstars, have been blowing off these big marquee games, Saturday night games, or if a team is traveling on the road, only goes in there once a year, how the superstars rest. It's been a huge problem for the league. It's been going on for a while. TV partners are not happy with that. They want some guarantees that guys are going to play. So the league did come up with some rules that basically say, you know, you've got to give the league a certain amount of time before a player's going to be off because of rest. They're going to try to change the culture of this whole thing, and this culture's been going on far too long. We've seen it. I mean, Kyrie Irving said not long ago that the 82-game season is basically a warm-up for the playoffs, and that's kind of the attitude the players have had. So there's a bunch of new rules. We'll see if they work. We'll see if the players find some loopholes in them, but it's all done ostensibly to make sure that the broadcast partners are happy so that the league gets a new big contract.
SiriusXM NBA Radio, Mitch Lawrence with us at SportsMap Radio Network here in Hour 1. And as we talk about the new rule, do you believe this has been the biggest problem that the NBA had to address right here, right now?
Well, yes, I think it does. I think it's even a bigger problem. It's worse than guys like Kevin Durant asking to be traded with 4 years left in his contract.
Right.
I mean, That's bad. You know, we have Damian Lillard who's doing that right now. He's got 2 or 3 years left on an extension. The players of this day and age, they go about it like they have a services contract with the league, not their team. So they want the best of all worlds. They want the money, the big extension, and then they're going to turn around and tell the team right away with 3 or 4 years left on the deal, they don't want to be there anymore. And that's not good. Adam Silver knows that. That's also something that's wrong. But this whole thing, yes, this has been a huge problem. And here's the reason why. You know, the players are, it's like I said, it's part of the culture now. You didn't have this 20 years ago. You didn't have this maybe 15 years ago. The players basically, the league wants the fans to be invested in the league, in the regular season.
Right.
To care about the regular season when their own players don't. That's what it comes down to. Isn't that, I mean, that's what's messed up about this whole thing. They're telling the fans, you should care about our 82-game regular season. When you have the Kawhi Leonards when they're not, you know, when he's not hurt, or the Paul Georges or other guys who are taking games off because of rest. So it's been a huge problem. It's been the mentality of the players today is much different than the players from days of yore, not that long ago. So yeah, this is something that the league has finally had to, you know, start a crackdown. But like I said before, the timing of it is interesting because we're on the eve of their negotiations to get the new TV deal that represents a lot of money for the league. And they realize that, no, the TV partners are need to have guarantees that guys are going to want to play on a Saturday night in a big marquee game on, you know, ABC. I mean, it's amazing that they have to ask the players to do that. You know, years ago, to get players to rest, you almost had to drag them off the court.
Yeah.
You know, years ago, guys would never rest. They'd have to be honestly injured to miss games. But that's all changed over the last 10, 15 years. So that mindset has changed. So yeah, it's been probably the worst thing optically, worst thing from an optic standpoint from the league to have the superstars miss these games, rest, and all because, Alyssa, they talk about, well, you know, everybody wants a 20-year career now. They're pointing to, I got to be ready for a game in 5 years. When they're asking fans to pay for games tonight, the players are talking about, I got to make sure I rest so I'm good in 5 years. That doesn't make sense. It's not good. It's anti-fan, and the league needs to do something about that.
Hey, we are hooping it up, talking some NBA, Sirius XM NBA Radio. Mitch Lawrence with us, and it is good news for the fans because teams no longer are able to rest two stars in the same game after the rule change. And all I can say is that this should get the players' attention because players are what required to appear in at least 65 games in order to qualify for individual awards or all NBA honors, correct?
That's the big deal. That started this year. I wish it were 75 games, but I'm an old timer. I've been around since covering the league full time since 87, 88. So that's a long time. But yeah, the league finally did that. So if you don't play minimum 65, you can't get these big all NBA, you know, awards and, you know, put on those teams, which means it could affect your future earnings in terms of big mega contract extensions and stuff like that. Fans might also want to know, remember how the Rockets sent John Wall home a couple of seasons ago? Can't do that anymore. That's out. The league now knows that that's a crackdown. You're going to see that too. You can't have Ben Simmons or John Wall be away from the team for extended period. Otherwise, that's going to result in a fine. But I'll tell you what, to me, the loophole here is that, yes, you're covering, you know, the players who have been all-stars for the last 3 years, of all-NBA for the last 3 years in terms of defining who is stars. But what about a guy like Victor Wembanyama? He's coming in the league. Mm-hmm. He's in San Antonio. Everybody thinks he's going to be the next big deal. He could rest. He could, if the Spurs wanted to. I think the loophole there is, and that should be closed, is the league should have said, starting now also, if you are a top 10 pick, if you were taken in the lottery part of the draft as a top 10 pick, starting with a Victor Wembanyama, this also applies to you in terms of the rest. Unfortunate that they didn't get that done. Maybe they'll have to do that in the future. And I hope, personally, that Victor Wembanyama plays close to 82 games as he possibly can, unless, of course, he's hurt. But I just don't want the rest thing happening to a big star like that, because that's going to backfire on him, backfire on the Spurs, and it's going to look bad for the league.
So what are you hearing as far as what has been the reaction from the players in the league?
Haven't heard much at all. We are in a really dead time.
Okay.
As you know, training camps start in a couple of weeks. So we haven't heard that much. I mean, there's nothing going on in terms of, you talk about a dead period, there's nothing going on with the trade demands of James Harden, Damian Lillard. So this, which just broke, this big thing about the crackdown on players resting, this just broke in the last, what, 3 or 4 days. So I'm sure as the players start getting back to their teams, as they start training camp, obviously, this will be a big deal. Now, it'll be interesting to see how the players approach this. Once again, it has to be pointed out, there are stiff penalties here, stiff fines, but who are they being paid by? They're not being paid by the players. They're being paid by their teams, okay? So you mean to tell me if Kawhi Leonard isn't hurt but really feels like he needs to rest, Steve Ballmer's not going to pay the fine for him? Of course he is. He'll be able to afford it quite easily. I would think this would have a lot more teeth, this rule, Alyssa. These crackdowns would have a lot more teeth if you had the players either pay the fines or actually be docked a game's pay for
there you go.
The game
Money
they
talks.
Were supposed to play. That would get everybody's attention, and there'd be hue and cry in the players, but so what? It's time for the league to take this all back, and like I said, it's now part of the culture in the NBA. They've got to change that culture. So, yeah, I'm sure some players won't be happy. Some players are going to say the team's going to pay it anyway. What do I care if there's a fine? But this is something that obviously had to be done, not just from the fan standpoint, but once again, you're trying to score a new TV deal. You're talking about a $75 billion deal.
Crazy.
Wow. I mean, you got to have people play. People aren't going to turn their TVs on to watch guys, not, you know, to see Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, or, you know, other people in street clubs.
So what say you? I mean, do you think it will yield results? It's going to motivate these guys to not take a night off?
I don't know. I mean, the mindset of the players has to be changed. It's so ingrained in them now, in terms of rest, in terms of their approach to their careers, in terms of I've got to get, you know, it's all about longevity now. I think for some guys it may change, but for other guys it won't change. They'll be looking for a way to get out, unfortunately. But this is, you know, this, well, you know, we've had a rule on the books. We've had, you know, resting rules on the books for 6 years. Let me ask you a question. Has those worked? Obviously the answer is no, because the league had to have even harsher rules put in. So it remains to be seen, I hope. I really hope for the league standpoint that, yes, this does start to change the mindset of players. We're just going to have to wait and see, right?
Hey, the countdown is on. The 78th NBA regular season will tip off October 24th. Training camp is going to get underway here in 3 weeks. A true pleasure to catch up with Mitch Lawrence from Sirius XM NBA Radio. Connect with our audience. Where else can they find you online, Mitch?
Well, they can get me on X at @Mitch_Lawrence. And also, you know, I'm still working for Sirius now and then with Frank Isola.
Oh, yeah.
Weekday morning,
we love Frank.
Sometimes on the weekend.
Uh-huh. Good stuff.
Right?
Hey, have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you real soon. Thanks, Mitch.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, Alyssa. Take care.
You bet. Stick around. Much more coming your way. Hour 2 is coming up next at Sports Map Radio Network.